So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me.
Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
From Stone Mountain, Georgia, Jay the Snake Roberts.
Wait a minute, the Snake is running. Come on, Snake is fighting. Jake the Snake has lost it.
Jake, to me, is one of the greatest talents I've ever seen.
One of the great minds in the history of the business.
He casts a spell on you. It's almost like you get caught in his web.
When the entire world knows you as one character for such a long time, I think it's easy to become that character, too.
You are a piece of shit, Snake! You chipped these fucking people! Fuck you!
He went through hell.
In the last 3 or 4 years, I didn't think I was going to have a dad around.
We're on our way to see Aurelian Smith. That's the real name of Jake the Snake Roberts.
A month ago, you did crack.
How often do you feel like you fight the addiction?
24/7. I know this is my last fucking shot in life.
Get in the car. Don't fucking pull this shit.
I don't know why I can't just say I'll never drink again, and that's that.
I'm always worried about what everybody else thought about me, and not what I feel about me.
My bitch.
My God, I'm not giving up.
A whole new resurrection, Jake Snake, coming here, brother.
And I'm gonna fucking beat it this time.
I told you to my ass.
I was getting tired of Lewis. I was getting tired of people cutting me off. Didn't you used to be Jake the Snake Roberts, man? What the fuck happened to you? Cut it off.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock with Wei Ting. Wei, I'm doing fine.
Are you really?
I don't really care how you're doing.
Me?
You gave me a lot of grief the last time I asked you how you're doing.
Oh, okay.
Very sarcastic. I'm doing great, just as I am 99% of the time you ask me.
Oh, right.
Very hurt by my genuine care that I put behind that question.
Are you sure that was
every single show?
I felt like that was like 2 weeks ago.
It could have been.
When you
could have been. We do talk a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Sorry if that offended you.
It didn't offend me. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Is that a hazelnut?
No, it's a French vanilla.
French vanilla.
Yeah.
You can smell it. It's a very nice smell.
Yeah, I've been enjoying these. They're not from Tim Hortons. But they are from the office coffee machine.
Ooh. I don't venture into that coffee.
It's not bad.
They've got some great choices out there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've got one that's a breakfast blend. They've also got, Donut Shop is what it's called.
Really?
Donut Shop Coffee. And that sounds really good to me.
I think that's probably like a ripoff of, maybe like a Dunkin' Donuts coffee or something.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think there's few better things, Wei, than when you get a coffee with a donut. I think they go very nicely together. But I don't eat many donuts, so I don't really partake.
How about a coffee and a muffin?
Usually, to me, it's like, that's my vice. When I fall off the wagon, it's like, I'll buy a donut.
What wagon are you on?
I'm on a strict one.
Like, why? Why do either of us need to stick to any type of diet?
I just don't. I find if I have, I don't eat a lot of candy, and I put kind of donuts in that. I mean, there's oh, really yeah. no well, redeeming
sure,
quality to
sure.
a donut. It's just it's fat and sugar. So if I eat that, if I eat like candy, I'll totally like break out.
Will you feel bad?
Sometimes.
Mentally?
Feel bad?
Yeah.
I won't say I have mental anguish, but then I'll just. Sometimes you'll just feel gross afterwards.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Are you in good shape right now? Are you in...
I'm fine. Yeah. Fine for a 31-year-old.
If they had called you 2 weeks ago to be a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble and you only had 48 hours to get ready, would you have been okay?
Well, what am I doing in the Rumble? Because I've seen some Rumbles where guys don't have to do much.
Yeah, you could.
Drew Carey was in a Royal Rumble.
How many people, if you had come out as a surprise entrant at the Royal Rumble, would have said, oh my God, it's Nakamura? Because I guarantee you there would have been 30% of people watching that would assume you were the mysterious Nakamura.
I don't know if... Yeah, yeah. For sure that's, you know... people would think that I was some type of Japanese cruiserweight, I would imagine. But I don't even...
You have been mistaken for Liger.
Actually, Okada.
Okada! I'm sorry. Okay. I was going to give him the benefit of the doubt that it was the masked wrestler, but no, it was the guy in plain view without a mask.
Yes, at St. John's Hall, back when Okada was... doing a brief indie tour of
how did
Canada.
I screw that story up? Because we've told it many a time.
Yeah.
Liger's the one you got the photo.
I was
one
mistaken.
Of the best photo ops you've ever been in.
I love that Liger photo.
It's a great photo.
But if I came out just as me, I don't even think people would think that, oh, there's a Japanese wrestler. I think they would think, what is this very thin, skinny, dorky-looking man doing walking out in the Royal Rumble?
Would you walk out with your glasses or without?
I wouldn't want them to break, so I'd probably walk out with them and just leave them by the ring.
That's a gimmick that hasn't been exploited enough.
Glasses?
The wrestler with glasses. You can't hit a man with glasses.
Where
does that term come from?
Can't hit a man with glasses?
Like, that's always said. Is it because of it's cheap, because his vision is impaired? But
yeah.
He's got glasses on. He'll see the shot coming.
Well,
or is it just, you know, these are expensive glasses. Don't hit a man with glasses.
You hit
take him off, so then he's blurred vision, and you can just sucker punch him.
You hit a man with glasses.
There's nothing honorable.
Glass might go in his eye. That could be messy.
Oh, that could be awful.
That's not really a fair fight. I mean, I think it's just to suggest the physical disability. You know, would you want to beat up somebody with a physical disability?
Like a guy with glasses can just essentially he has carte blanche to talk shit.
Yeah,
because anything you do. You punch him in the face with glasses, it could severely affect his eye with a glass going into the a shard of glass into the eye.
Well.
You take the glasses off of the guy, he can't see anything. That's awful.
Well, you can always punch the guy in the stomach. I think that's fair game.
That's probably your best bet.
Yeah. Or I'm sure a bunch of ways you can hurt a man with glasses if you really wanted to.
Well, that would be your strategy. You got to stay in shape is what I'm saying, because like our guest today, Diamond Dallas Page, who last year he got that call to be a surprise entrant in the
Royal
Rumble.
That's right, yes.
He'll be on the show.
I heard a portion of the interview on The Law, and I can't wait to hear the whole thing.
It did air?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It aired, a portion of it aired, didn't it?
Yeah, I did it last week.
Yeah.
And everything went fine.
Great.
So I'm glad that we'll have the whole interview here on the show today.
Oh, so looking forward to it. This is a great plan set out 2 weeks ago.
Yes. Yeah, we had a hiccup because we had one time scheduled with them, and that didn't work out, which was like 2 weeks ago on the Thursday.
Yeah.
So then I rescheduled it for the following week.
Yeah.
It went perfectly.
Well, it's funny how, or very, very well scheduled, how all that turned out. And everything went off without a hitch.
I am going to transition from an interview that went without a hitch to an interactive portion on Twitch, where Quentin Jackson has just, I swear we didn't plan that segue. Wade just absolutely led me into it. Do you have 2 minutes to watch something that's awesome?
Of course.
Quentin Jackson got a beta version of the new UFC video game and decided to play it.
Awesome. So is he allowed to do that?
I don't know.
Okay.
So this video might be gone.
Is he allowed to broadcast this?
Doubtful.
Okay,
doubtful.
Let's watch it.
So this is him and his buddy. This is at the 49-minute mark, and they're selecting fighters.
For people who don't know, by the way, Twitch is the the Xbox service that allows people to broadcast their video game playing, and Quentin Jackson is probably one of the more widely known celebrities
he's gotten great stuff out of this. Twitch.
He's hilarious.
Where he will call people in the middle of the night. He's woken up Ariel Helwani. They buried their beef on Twitch. I mean, there's been some unbelievable stuff. He called up Rashad Evans, his longtime rival. You heard them to bond on Twitch?
Or were they playing, like, so the guy doesn't even have to be playing
video games. He just calls them in the middle of the night as he's playing video games.
It's just the Quentin Jackson webcam.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. So here's Quentin selecting a fighter, and then we go through. This is about, well, we'll just watch.
All right.
Oh, no, I turned my volume off.
Oh.
We got a white dude in the fro. Who's that? Gunner? My boy BJ Penn. I ought to go see him, Punk.
Oh, CM Punk is in the game.
Right. Oh, yes.
All right, here we go.
Here's the people what they was asking for.
All right. CM Punk. I go to Black Shorts. Hold on, they wanted to see the roster. But you guys, see, we'll show you guys the roster out there. Check Congo probably at the gym.
Hey,
Check Congo
just was here a second ago. Surprised the hell out of me. I'm just walking in the hallway in the kitchen and Check Congo.
Okay.
Good
fix up. Okay.
There we go. He's got CM Punk versus Nick Diaz right now.
Look at his hair. Hold on. Don't hit me. Look at his hair. Look at CM Punk's hair. Look at his hair move around. Oh, snap.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, snap.
Oh, is that that's the bug
in the game,
man?
I want to pick Diaz.
When I knock your ass out, though, it's probably going to flop around, too.
I want to pick Diaz.
You want to be Diaz?
Good head movement on Punk. It's an exclusive CM Punk's debut.
CM Punk versus Nick Diaz.
What? Hit my hair. Come on. Hit this hair. You can't hit this hair. You can't hit this hair, though.
Quentin's really bad at this.
You can't hit the hair, though. Homie, what's up?
He's playing somebody online,
isn't he? What's up, Nick Diaz? Hey, homie, I thought you was bad for 5. He kicked him in the nuts. Come on, get up, Punk. Punk, get your ass up. Come on, get up.
Okay, I enjoyed that way more than Wade did.
Oh no, it's very amusing. I can watch that.
I love watching Quentin Jackson play video games.
Oh man, yeah.
I think this is a great vehicle for the man.
No doubt.
So there you go. Nick Diaz defeated CM Punk.
Do you follow Up Up Down Down? Do you ever watch any of those?
No, I've never watched any of it. Do you?
I watch some of them. Yeah, they're very entertaining.
How is Xavier Woods as a host?
He's great.
Yeah.
He's excellent. And I think...
I haven't even watched the videos where they've brought in and done stuff with Kenny Omega. That's kind
of
cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw one of those.
Yeah,
I wonder
how
they hooked up. You can really get a sense of who's booked on Raw and who's not by watching Up, Up, Down, Down. And, you know, you see constants like Damian Sandow, and you realize, oh, that's what this guy's been up to this whole time. Oh. He's always back there.
Yeah, kind of was his Damian Sandow, Damian Mizdow trajectory. He went up, up, and he's gone down, 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 down.
Very good.
Well, that's... I'm on fire today, Wei. I'm very excited for this review. You want to get into things?
Yeah.
The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts. We got a number of requests to review this one. It came out on iTunes at the beginning of the year. Immediately got a lot of very glowing reviews, and... First of all, whenever we watch a documentary, a big topic is footage and their ability to gather various footage. This might be the most WWE footage I've ever seen in a non-WWE project, to the point that they clearly had you have one of two things. Either this is such an underground documentary that they're just hoping the WWE doesn't find out, or you have some very... smart people that understand how to work around fair use. And in this case, Chris Bell is the executive producer of this. So I don't doubt that they went through the appropriate means to garner what I'll even say I thought was too much WWF footage that they just blanketed around so much of this.
Perhaps. And I would have to think that, you know, Jake's and DDP's personal relationships with the WWE, Triple H, whoever... must have played a part in all this as well. I would have to think so.
Yeah, quite possibly. I might have asked Dallas about that. I can't quite remember,
because
it was a week or so ago that we discussed, but I'm sure we'll probably get into
that. Yeah, we'll find out.
I guess with Jake the Snake Roberts, this comes up in the documentary. At one point, it's just kind of a passing comment about the people filming him, and at one point, he kind of snaps and kind of compares them to the experience he went through on Beyond the Mat, which Beyond the Mat is a documentary that has near universal praise. But I don't say unanimous, because Jake the Snake Roberts has always been very upset at how he was portrayed in that documentary, what was pitched to him, and that it would somewhat be more of a kind of motivational, really? Educational message, to the point that when the WWE put out that biographical DVD out on Jake a number of years back, they dedicated a chapter to addressing Beyond the Mat. I felt that the portrayal of Jake the Snake Roberts in Beyond the Mat was pretty damn accurate about where Jake the Snake Roberts' life was at that time. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't a glowing look at this legend. It was, here is a guy whose drug use has ruined this man's life, has ruined his career. And that's where he was when that movie came out in 2000. So from a more objective standpoint, I can see Jake being upset about that. But in many ways, I don't think it was... I don't know what was pitched to him. I don't know what Barry Blaustein conveyed to him would be the final product. But I thought it was pretty accurate in terms of the many, many stories you heard at the time of Jake Roberts.
Yeah, and I don't doubt, you know, in any type of documentary that there's an exaggeration simply by the factor of omission due to time constraints. You really only have enough time to kind of tell your cohesive story, and I'm sure there's plenty of like footage from those interviews that they captured of Jake for Beyond the Mat, but they probably only chose to tell that side of the story. And I suppose if you're the subject, that's a little unfortunate because, you know, in the years since, Jake Roberts, along with Scott Hall, have become sort of the figureheads of that, you know, retired, broken down, drug addicted wrestler cliche. But nonetheless, there have been other incidents that we've seen, you know, that have kind of supported the stereotype, unfortunately. And even the idea of this documentary to kind of, you know, show his redemption from that drug addicted person, that life that he was actually leading, to somebody who's cleaned himself up, is almost a confirmation that that person did exist in that documentary, Beyond the Mat.
Yeah, and Beyond the Mat, I mean, when we had Barry Blaustein on the show, I mean, we went over that. That was one of my favorite reviews when we actually got to have Barry Blaustein on the show. But they went into that documentary with the idea of almost casting roles. Like, here is the legend past his prime and down and out, and that was Jake.
Yeah.
And Mick Foley was kind of, when they started filming, he wasn't in the WWF. Mm-hmm. And he was on the Independents and had kind of filled that role as well. And then as they started filming, he comes into the WWF and then he rises to this gigantic fame. They had to change course on him. And then Terry Funk played another role. Then you had Tony Jones as the rising up and comer with Michael Modest. So you had kind of these different roles that were already, you're going into this with this thought in mind. So with Jake, of course, you're going to have a certain narrative in mind when you're cutting this, when you're editing this.
Yeah, and that's just, I think that's just filmmaking, you know? Certainly no one person is really just one character. I think everybody has multiple sides, but Jake just happened to fit kind of that sad, you know, more depressing look at professional wrestling that I think really made that film work. But, you know, maybe for somebody like Jake Roberts, didn't really help his reputation.
How did you feel about the entire idea of this project, of here is a guy that when it starts, he is massively overweight, has all of these problems, indicates he was a month out from the last time he had smoked crack. He was at a low point. Mm-hmm. And the decision to film all of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should mention that much of this was all produced by Diamond Dallas Page's team,
yes.
Right? At
yes.
DDP Yoga. In
DDPY now.
Why not DDP Yoga?
Why not? I don't know. Maybe
DDPY.
Yoga, it's like wrestling in WWE. I don't know.
Okay.
I can't tell you.
So DDP and DDPY, they have their own team of video producers that I assume that they just use to promote DDP Yoga related things. And so this was all kind of in place. I don't know if it's just timing or what, but probably if there's one thing about this DDPY that we can see from that we can learn is that DDP is a fantastic marketer, because, you know, there are plenty of yoga startups out there. There are plenty of people trying to get in the yoga game, but what he's been able to do and how successful he's been able to, like, we all, you've probably seen that video of that overweight man who...
Arthur.
Arthur, yes. Everybody's seen that. Not, you don't even have to be a wrestling
fan. It's incredible.
And that thing's gone viral. So I think, you know, we really have to admire the marketing savvy, in particular the video production marketing savvy of him and his team. And I'm sure they saw, first of all, you know, an opportunity here, let's be honest, you know, to help promote his brand. But secondly, this did turn out to be a very inspirational story, that, and I'm sure that's part of the intent as well, is to help inspire people to you know, change for the better.
I look at it, certainly there is something to gain here if you're Diamond Dallas Page, of there's going to be a byproduct. If there's a success story here, there's a benefit that this program can greatly help somebody out. Mm-hmm. I really don't care about that if at the end of the day there are people that are much better off in life than they were before this. It's not all unlike the WWE wellness policy, which we can go into. I mean, it's good and bad. But the overall point of that, do we have healthier wrestlers today than a decade ago? I would very confidently say yes. And Vince McMahon stated flat out when he was having his those hearings, said it's public relations.
Mm-hmm.
Sure it is. I don't care.
Yep.
I don't care if it's public relations, the fact that they have this wellness policy or that they'll sponsor rehab for wrestlers. If at the end of the day, there's something good that comes out of this, I don't care. Diamond Dallas Page, I think, should be applauded for what has transpired involving many of these wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And if it's really helpful, then maybe you want more of a spotlight on this product. If it's not going to say it's going to cure every addict out there, but is it going to make you healthier if you commit to this program?
Yeah,
I think the proof of these two, Chris Jericho, who said his career was saved from this, AJ Styles recently working with him, and probably countless others. Goldust is in this particular documentary as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are real results.
Oh, yeah.
This is not just some bogus snake oil product.
And to be sure, it's not just the working out. It's the lifestyle change, too, that they do emphasize in this. But how did this whole thing come about? Was it Jake who contacted DDP?
I feel it was Paige contacting Jake is how it started, and realizing this guy was in a really bad predicament, very much like they outline with Scott Hall. And when that video first came out where Jake and DDP call Scott Hall and are filming it, there was a lot of criticism to that at the time, that here you
why
are.
Why are you filming this?
Why are they filming this? Right. And here's Scott Hall receiving a call. He's not really aware that this is all being filmed for a documentary. Mm. At the other side, the fact that this is all being filmed, I don't know if that gives some extra incentive to these guys, knowing that this is all being monitored and recorded, that it would keep them somewhat honest, even though these are performers through and through who see that red light.
Definitely.
And I was always watching this documentary with that in mind, that what you're watching here, you have to always take with a grain of salt, because these are dyed-in-the-wool performers that have always conveyed something to a camera that's not always honest.
Absolutely, absolutely. From the documentary, we can't really tell, you know, how the ball kind of started to get rolling. It just kind of picks up from, you know, showing Jake at his highest, and then showing Jake at his lowest,
and stating quickly, retirees have no purpose in life.
Ooh, yes.
That's where we started with Jake.
Yeah, there's a big opening montage, and I mean big, because they got a lot of people to talk about Jake here in this opening 10 minutes. And just some of the names were Jericho, Austin here talks about Jake, DiBiase, Mean Gene, Jim Ross, Edge. So they definitely had great access to the people for this documentary.
Yeah, you got Jake discussing, you know, being retired at this point. His body has just failed him to such a degree that he just cannot work anymore. And is sick of people asking what happened to him long after his run. And we see this throughout many wrestlers of this generation who did not have a very seamless exit plan to segue off into another career after pro wrestling. And it becomes guys that are 50 plus, working independent dates, trying to stay within wrestling somehow, and it's constantly a comparison to their glory days. And this footage that they had, it was able to really hit you over the head. Here is this guy performing at WrestleManias, and now he's broken down and doesn't know what his next step is going to be.
In fact, they go right from WrestleMania 3, and they just go right from that to an incident from 2008 in Cleveland, where I hadn't seen this before. Did you hear about it at the time?
Yes. Yeah, this was the story that TMZ jumped on top of this story. It was from September of 2008, and Jake comes out completely loaded and goes to cut a promo, and this is just awful footage to be watching. And the promoter is stating that he had had 22 of those airplane vodka bottles and had finished them backstage, comes out, is just a mess, has to go through what can not even be described as a match that went all of 30 seconds. And
what was great was that they did an interview with a guy who was wrestling there, who tried to save the segment, and he saw that, you know, what was happening was terrible, so he decided to run out and try to get DDT'd by Jake in order to just close the segment on a happier note. And he talks about just the anguish of trying to get this drunken man to DDT him, and Jake just wasn't there.
I thought he was a little delusional, thinking this would have been a non-story if only he had hit this DDT.
No, for sure.
I mean, this was a train wreck long before the missed spot.
But the missed, like the to see a man try to get another man to give him a wrestling move and doing, like, failing to do so is just such a weird thing of that you can only find in pro wrestling. That just kind of made the incident much more sadder, and it was really nice to have that running commentary from the guy who was trying to get that out of Jake.
Yeah, I thought Jericho summed it up perfectly, that he never even watched it, stating he has a hard time understanding why people around would rather film this than help this man.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I think that can be discussed at a much larger level, that is the automatic reaction when you see something now in public. It's get your phone out rather than offer assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And this became a big story in 2008. And they also interviewed Adam Copeland here, and discussing just how Jake's issues had affected him. They even showed some of the Heroes of Wrestling footage very briefly here with his, you want 21? I'll give you 22. And Edge suggesting that Jake really morphed into that character, became that character, and couldn't essentially separate the two.
Mm.
And it was interesting to have the contrast, especially of Adam Copeland and I'll say Chris Jericho, two people that I think have been perfect examples of guys that achieved incredible success in wrestling, that when wrestling is done, they have careers outside of it and can completely drop that.
Yep.
Adam Copeland is someone that never wants to be referred to as Edge. He looks at it as this fictional character, and I think a lot of these guys saw this generation ahead of them who could not separate this and went into numerous problems outside of wrestling that I think a lot of select guys from the younger generation have been able to see the pitfalls and learn from.
Hmm.
Not all, but some.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Those would be two examples. So then we go from 2008 all the way up to August of 2012 when they travel to Gainesville, Texas with Diamond Dallas Page going to visit Jake. And Page is discussing his background with Jake, and in particular, Jake Roberts and Dusty Rhodes being his mentors. And Adam Copeland, they have kind of explained his own natural skepticism to all of this, that I think a lot of people watched from the outside looking at, what was this? Was this some just marketing ploy on DDP's part? Was this something real? And it was going to take a lot of time to convince people. And I was glad that this never, to me, fell into infomercial land. This never felt as a hard push on DDP yoga.
Yeah.
It felt like this was something that we can address the questions you, the audience member, probably have and what skeptics would have. Because there's always natural skepticism when you have a guy like Jake Roberts that's been a drug addict for decades. And why is this going to be the magic pill?
Mm-hmm.
Pardon the pun, that would cure him. Probably not looking for anything in pill form. And they find him living in a very modest home, and we get an update on Jake's health. He's been dealing with concussion problems, which isn't really addressed all that further in the documentary, what effect head trauma has had on him, neck issues, hip problems. And we also are introduced to Steve Yu, who is the filmmaker and one of the main people putting this documentary together, that is featured on camera as well.
Yeah, and he kind of explains how, you know, I'm sure, like, just to field some of the concerns about why this was being done, he just, it's refreshing to see the filmmaker appear on screen kind of addressing concerns. And he talks about just, you know, realizing that this is a great opportunity to tell Jake's story. And hopefully, you know, I guess they were just hoping that he came out of the other end properly.
He was a good link as well, because it felt like there were different times throughout the filming that Paige had to travel or go around, and, yep, and he could be that link to keep things going, mm-hmm, and be your kind of authoritative voice on camera, yeah, and confronting Jake later. So he did play a big role in this.
So in this 2012 meeting, Jake just looks awful, very immobile, and he's just like,
it's over 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Looks terrible.
He also talks about his father and the issues that he had, you know, just even underneath the physical. He talked about how he never wanted to be a wrestler like his father, but only did it to shove it up his ass, and talks about the sexual abuse he suffered from his stepmother as a child, and it was all very revealing and like very heavy.
Yeah, and obviously, if you've seen Beyond the Mat, there's that awfully awkward scene where Jake and his father are filmed together chopping wood, and he goes over just the problems he had with his father and kind of trying to live up to his expectations, but nothing as revealing as this, where, mm-hmm, he goes into being with the problems with the stepmother and his father, who was Grizzly Smith, a pretty well-known pro wrestler in the territorial days, who just died a number of years back, and kind of setting the scene for what he has dealt with. This is not something that this is positioned as, well, it was life on the road that he fell into this. It seemed like this was a guy that fought issues from childhood onward. He's, yeah, had a traumatic life. Mm-hmm. I mean, his sister was murdered. He dealt with all of this with his father and stepmother.
Yeah.
And drugs were a major element to his entire life.
Definitely. And, you know, just like he was in Beyond the Mat, you quickly realize from watching this that Jake is just an incredibly compelling subject for a documentary. He's, you know, just, he's so revealing and so honest, and if he feels happy, you really see it. And when he feels sad, you really see it, and it really comes across on screen. So just,
he's one of the more engaging people.
Oh, yeah.
When Agnew interviewed him last summer, I mean, that guy is an open book about things. I mean, when you, because that was right when the Hogan deal happened, mm-hmm, and being as open as he was to say, listen, I've used that word and that's pretty awful. I look, yeah, back at it and a lot of regret. He's somebody that will open up very easily to people.
Yeah, and I found that in a lot of the older wrestlers now who just, they just have a sense of having nothing to lose, and so they're not afraid to completely speak their mind. And I'm thinking of, you know, somebody like a Bret Hart, for instance. And it's just, it's so refreshing to hear anybody willingly to speak on camera like that, you know, especially in professional wrestling, where I think traditionally, and even to this day, people are so guarded about their true thoughts.
So this begins the pilgrimage for Jake Roberts, leaving his home in Texas to go live with Diamond Dallas Page and the crew that lives in Atlanta, the Accountability Crib, in October of 2012. And they go over rules for the house. And this begins as a singular focus on Jake Roberts. And then it felt like Scott Hall kind of became part of the mix, even though maybe that wasn't the initial plan. It was simply, this was to help Jake.
Yeah.
And then became kind of a dual focus on, yeah, those two. But they focus on Jake at first and just trying to become mobile, to become active health-wise, where he is just wrecked at this point. And they're just trying to get him to do basics. push-ups, sit-ups, and introduce him slowly to this program.
At this point, like, we're basically treated to, like, you know, a pretty lengthy process of him getting showing a lot of progress, losing weight, but then suffering a setback, whether it be an injury or there's a moment that they captured of him being caught drinking at an airport. Like, this was a week into moving to Atlanta. They had found Jake after the end of that week at the airport. He was drunk and he didn't have shoes on. So little moments like this that were just, it was just great footage and really incredible to see.
See, that's the two areas I look at. There's the side that I look at this finished product, and I think it was important that they shoot this because Jake is adamant at this airport. He is fine. He's very hostile. Mm-hmm. He's on the verge of being violent. And then they show him this footage the next day as this wake-up call that I think was necessary for him to see. However, if I was in that moment as someone at this airport, and there's Jake Roberts is a somewhat recognizable figure if you've, you know, not to say he's a A-list celebrity, but you see this crew filming this man who is clearly drunk. I would look at these people as just piranhas.
For sure.
Just trying to film this guy in his worst state, not realizing there is a method to this and an idea to help him.
Yeah.
Rather than just shooting him and sending it off to TMZ. Look, WWF legend drunk at public airport.
Yeah, I mean obviously there's complete agreement from the subject,
but I think you can see why people would be looking at something like this as somewhat exploitive without seeing what they're trying to do here.
Exactly. Yes.
So yeah, there's the big airport incident. There was also an incident right before that where they're on the internet and see a report about Jake showing up drunk at an independent show, and he admits to having two beers backstage but was not drunk. And this set him off into a tailspin as well, and so starts breaking down crying over trying to have the approval of others. I mean, you see Jake in a very vulnerable light that goes beyond being aware of the cameras. I think you do get quite a look at Jake Roberts, the individual here.
Yeah, definitely. And you get a real sense of just the constant struggle that, you know, this guy has to go through mentally, whether it be a physical ailment that's preventing him from getting into shape, or some kind of hindrance to his reputation that's all the way out who knows where. But they're all setbacks, and I think it just kind of shows how slow and how big of a struggle this progression is. But I will say, you know, just it felt – I got lost at times trying to figure out how much time had passed, because I felt like certain parts of the – definitely a lot of scenes in the documentary, they moved a little too quickly and without really kind of the wrapping around of the beginning of a scene or the end of the scene. Like, we'd go from him, moving into the house, and all of a sudden, the very next shot is him down 12 pounds. I kind of had some issues with the flow of the whole thing.
Well, the airport scene where he's falling off, we almost go right into he's going off to Las Vegas for an autograph session, and he's strong enough to now go on this trip. It's like, Jesus, my head's spinning here.
Yeah.
And I was not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, are we okay to make alcoholic jokes? I guess maybe sensitive subject matter. They also put him on Anabuse at this time, which is a medication you can take in pill form that will make you violently ill if you drink any alcohol. And that reminded me of Scott Hall was on Anabuse when he had come back to the WWF in 2002 with Hogan and Nash. And what did they do on one of the first angles on SmackDown? They had Steve Austin pour beer all over the guy in the middle of the ring while he's on this Anabuse. Jeez. And it's just stuff like that just makes you shake your head and made me violently ill thinking about that decision making. Let's see how strong this guy is.
So, you know, I definitely had some issues with some of the pacing of some of these moments. And they got some great moments on film, some incredible moments. But I think the building up to some of these moments and the resolutions of some of these moments definitely could have used some work. So Jake goes to Las Vegas, which I think for any addict is probably the last place in the world that you're supposed to go to. But he makes it there.
Do you remember that?
And he makes it back.
Remember that year at WrestleMania in Miami and we went to Jake's Q&A? Late
yeah.
that night, and
you
had
oh,
just
yeah.
fans bringing him up booze. And,
yeah.
I mean,
what year was that?
2012. So that was
during this.
That was the April before. October is when they showed up. When he moved to DDP's
oh, wow.
home, so it was that summer
yeah.
that they went to the home.
Yeah,
and then moved him to Atlanta. But that was yeah the WrestleMania before.
Yeah,
I mean we're sitting there, and I felt incredibly awkward. That here's a guy that has a noted alcohol and drug problem, and you have these fans that are just mm-hmm. idiots, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah. But I also fault him for not turning down these drinks, too, because I'm sure to this day, Jake Roberts is going to get fans, you know, he's going to make an appearance, and people might be aware of the severity of his problems. They might not be. And they'd be offering him drinks, you know?
So from Vegas, which he goes through the 4 days and comes back without any problems and even takes a test afterwards to yeah. verify he did not have any alcohol.
And he seemed just so incredibly proud of himself upon receiving the result of this test, like he had just, you know, won a championship or something. And that was certainly one of the happy parts of this story. But it like I said, it constantly goes up and down.
Yeah, they show after that him injuring his shoulder while training and has a moment where he's just breaking down crying at how he's allowed his body, which he made his living off of, get to this point where he can't do anything and his mm-hmm. body is giving up on him.
And they realize that he needs surgery to fix his hip.
This was when he met with the doctor and he needed shoulder surgery, right. which was going to cost $8,000. And they create an Indiegogo campaign for him. And the next day, they've raised $7,000 over the course of a night. And I thought this was maybe the most, I don't know, favorite scene, but just his reaction to this
yep.
that I think was genuine, just stunning amazement at this
yeah.
these fans that are going to pay for his surgery.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not the first time we've seen on film, you know, a pro wrestler's reaction to the amount of support that they would receive from an Indiegogo or Kickstarter campaign. You think the Nigel McGuinness documentary had very much a similar scene, like where the fans played the turning point in the story. You know, you think the wrestler is at his lowest, but Indiegogo, Kickstarter, and all the support comes in. And it was really nice to see Jake find this out for the first time on camera. This camera crew must have had just hundreds and hundreds
of
hours.
They had 24/7 access to this guy, which
yeah, that is a lot of footage to go through. So,
but and is an awful process to go through if you're the subject.
Yeah.
Because there, I guarantee you, there are times that it's like, turn the fucking thing off.
Oh, yeah, and we saw that, too.
Yes. Yeah. So that was a pretty heartwarming scene to see his reaction. And what did you think about it? They were very sporadic throughout the documentary, but we did see Jake's kids. He mentioned he has, what, 7 kids? And we only saw 3 of them, 2 of his sons, and then the one daughter that was heavily featured in Beyond the Mat, where they had an awful relationship and were trying to resurrect that relationship. But they weren't in it too often. But she was there when he was seeing the reaction, and you could see his kids. I don't think they really necessarily wanted to be on camera all that much, but were very supportive of their father giving this an honest attempt to yeah. to clean up his life at this point.
Well, I thought they added tremendous context to just the toll, you know, that this man's addictions have caused them. He's not just affecting his own life. He affected several of his family members at the same time.
This is when it's kind of the second half of the documentary, when Scott Hall is introduced. And this was started as a result of a phone call from Sean Waltman, who was very concerned about Scott Hall at this point, stating that he was looking for a gun, and Page notes how much Scott Hall and Kevin Nash helped him get over in WCW, and Page and Jake, this is where they do the scene where they call Scott Hall, who sounds awful, and mentions on the speakerphone that he's drinking vodka for breakfast, and he makes the agreement. He is at his lowest, yeah, and is just willing to say, fuck it, I will do whatever you guys have for me if you'll have me at your home, because I'm done.
This phone call was like very tough to watch.
Which is why people had a big problem when it was posted without the context of a documentary behind it. It was right. Just this was put on. It's like, how could you call this man and put this out there?
Yeah.
And it was very difficult to hear and watch.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like a man very near his death, and it was very sad. But knowing how Hall turned out, I think to be able to look back and see that he went from that guy to where he is today is a great, you know, kind of benchmark to see how much he actually has progressed. So, again, some real incredible footage that they managed to capture.
Yeah, Scott Hall is in awful shape himself. He said he weighed 310 pounds when he showed up in Atlanta. He's in need of hip surgery, so he's barely getting around at this point. So Scott Hall is the latest project as yeah. Jake is advancing.
He's in pain, and like he's on the phone with Jake, and it's incredible to see Jake Roberts now at the point where he's able to help other people when, you know, I'm sure just several months back he was in the same position as Hall. And Jake tells Scott that he's been clean for 60 days. And I think unless you're, you know, you've been through an addiction, like you and I, we don't know what, 60 days without drinking, that's nothing. But to an addict, that
coffee
seems,
way, like I couldn't...
That seems like a lifetime, and to kind of hear like Scott Hall's shock at Jake being able to accomplish 60 days was it kind of like gave some insight into, you know, the mind of somebody going through something like this.
So they go to Las Vegas. Jake goes again. This is for the Cauliflower Alley Club in 2013, where those that attended said his speech was phenomenal, and you got to see some highlights of it with DDP introducing him, and then after that, Jake accepting the award and thanking his kids. It was a very nice speech, very reminiscent of the one he would give a year later at the Hall of Fame. And then Page is off. He's got some trip in Costa Rica, and he's packing, and we got this very bizarre story where Jake is with... Is it his girlfriend that was going to get her hair cut? And then after that, they start talking about Jake's hair. And he starts getting really upset about the comments that guys in the house are making about his hair. And then he takes the cameraman aside and, like, cuts this promo about his hair. And this raises the concern of those in the house that this guy's drinking again or doing something. And they force him to have an anabuse pill, which he...
This is awesome. Oh,
this was like a guy hiding a blade or something. Yeah. They show the replay of it in slow motion, whereas he reaches over for water from the sink, spits the pill out, and then pretends to swallow the pill, and he's fine.
Incredible.
Like,
incredible.
Worker, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's why you got to watch all of this stuff with a certain grain of salt, because these guys are performers, and I don't care what setting you put them in.
They're professional con men. That's it, physical con men, and that's the talent that I think we're also impressed by. That's professional wrestling.
But you have this belief overall, and this is not just exclusive to wrestling, that, okay, what happens in the body of a wrestling show is that's all there for entertainment, but if it happens on a DVD release or a shoot interview or a guy is on Twitter writing something, it's like, oh, that's all real stuff. It's like, well, these are just different ways that guys are working their stuff, man.
But John, whether or not the cameras were there, this incident still probably would have taken place.
I'm not so much directly from this scene. All I'm saying is that when you're watching pro wrestlers, I mean, these guys made their living off of making you feel a certain way about them.
Well, they're all politicians. You say the same thing about politicians, you could say the same thing about actors, you could say the same thing about anybody who, reporters, you know, journalists. I'm sure it's all, it's all to be taken with a certain grain of salt. But nonetheless, I was just very impressed at Jay's sleight of hand here. Very impressive.
And that they caught it.
Yes.
As well, like they probably went through. I want to see the replay footage of where they maybe zoomed in on their mm-hmm. footage.
So then DDP comes back. Dad comes back.
Oh, yeah. Dad's pissed.
Has a big talk with Jake.
Diamond Daddy Page.
Yeah. It just seems like, you know, it's a cycle now at this point of Jake progressing a lot, getting better, and then having some type of mental setback or physical setback, and DDP has to come and have a big brother talk to him again and to set him right.
So the decision is made that what Jake needs is AA. 90 meetings in 90 days is what he is going to be put on so that he has a constant outlet to go through his addictions with other addicts, and that's where he enters that program. They show some footage with one of Mick Foley's stand-up shows with Jake and Hall involved, and we're also introduced to Kyle McGee, who becomes a friend of Jake Roberts, and they eventually start living together and starting a podcast together, and we're seeing Jake leave the home with DDP and the whole crew around him to try and branch out and live with somebody else and move on with his life while they're still very concerned if he's ready for this move.
Yeah. He moves out, and then he gets into an argument again. He's and this was, again, kind of where I got lost at times in just the jumping in time in the documentary where, Jake moves in with his friend Kyle. Jake cuts his hair. He's happy. And then
he disappears.
He just gets upset, and we don't know. He's freaking out, but I never really know what he's freaking out about. He threatens to leave the whole project, and then we find out that Jake is upset that the documentarians are going to fuck him over like they did with Beyond the Mat. And at this point, Jake again agrees to take another drug test.
Yeah, and we have a big moment on camera where he very much is just analyzing himself, and that everything he wanted to be was the opposite of his own father, who neglected his children, and he says he's done the identical thing with his eight children. He had eight children, right, that we mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, again, it's just a constant cycle of Jake being happy, Jake fucking up and showing regret, and then he has a meeting with Dallas, and then he feels better, which I'm sure, you know, in a way mirrors the constant struggle of addiction. It just doesn't go away forever. You're subject to constant ups and downs.
So from there, as Jake is responding well at this point to the rehab, we have a scene where he walks in and he's just upset and is telling Diamond Dallas Page that his big dream of appearing in the 2014 Royal Rumble, which they've been teasing throughout.
Actually, prior to this, DDP was invited to go to Old School Raw.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That ties into all this. DDP is invited there, and then Jake goes along with him to the Old School Raw.
And Jake actually had his first return to the WWE, which was in the main event to save CM Punk and some other guys from The Shield.
Yes.
And I still remember watching that and just how incredible it was. This time we got to see it through the eyes of all the people around him at DDP's house.
Yeah, they're filming them watching this on Raw, and they were not aware Jake was going to show up on the show.
And Jake just has the most beautiful description of going through that moment about how, you know, I think he talked about how he wasn't really nervous the whole day walking through, but then he placed his hands on the mat, and that's when everything came flooding back to him. And just watching it, I think at the time you felt emotional for Jake, but to hear him describe it so poetically and to see the reactions of the people around him, knowing at this point the intense struggle he had to get to even this point, made this bit very, very impactful.
Yeah, and if you remember that, they didn't really show this in the documentary, but the look on Dean Ambrose's face when the snake was put on top of him, like, Ambrose couldn't help but just smile. Like, this was the greatest moment of his career, getting the Jake the Snake Roberts to place his snake on top of him.
And I think anybody who knew Jake's story, you know, from Beyond the Mat or anything to, from his reputation, just couldn't help but enjoy that moment to see how much this man's progressed to be able to get to this point where he can show his face in front of this audience again.
Yeah, and he shares a story when he got to the gorilla position and had not seen Vince in years at this point, and Vince welcoming him home. Ted DiBiase shares a story that he was there. He didn't know Jake was going to be in the final segment, so he left the show early and missed the segment entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards...
This is the scene with the Rumble.
Yeah, that's when we get this. And Jake also noting, right after this huge moment, this great return, that he's scared to death he's going to screw this up, because that's what he always does. That's his. That's just his nature. When something good happens, he finds a way to mess it up. And this is when he walks into the room with Paige, and he's all distraught because he's got a phone call from Triple H. He is not going to be in the Royal Rumble. And Paige is just trying to, you know, look on the bright side of things. You're back in the fold with the WWE family. And then Jake reveals afterwards that instead of the Royal Rumble, he'll be going into the Hall of Fame in April as the big swerve. On Dad. And yeah. Paige is in tears afterwards in this.
DDP was more emotional than Roberts probably was. I mean, it was very heartwarming to see, this was basically like DDP going into the Hall of Fame as well. You know what I mean? Like the fact that he was able to bring this guy up from the way we saw him at the beginning of the documentary to the point now where he's going to the Hall of Fame, you see some real emotion from DDP, who worked really hard to help this guy get into, you know, the shape that he's in today.
Yeah, and of course, then Scott Hall is also put into the Hall of Fame that year. So you had Jake and Scott going into the Hall of Fame that year in New Orleans, and we got footage over WrestleMania weekend, the two appearing at WrestleCon, and then highlights of the Hall of Fame ceremony. And that's as things close down. We get Jake ending the documentary with his Hall of Fame speech and again thanking his family. And a really cool final scene where the three of them are in an empty gym together inside of a wrestling ring. And Scott Hall notes that he always felt safer inside of this ring. And Jake admits that he will never be cured from this addiction, but says, "My history will not be my destiny."
Mm-hmm.
To end this off.
Yeah.
And they dedicate this documentary to the late Roddy Piper and Dusty Rhodes. And that's how it concludes.
I really like that little bit at the end. You know, it was just kind of cute to see the three of them, these old-timers get in the ring again and lock up. And it was really nice. I mean, obviously, it was very staged, but it totally worked. Totally worked to close the documentary. All in all, I enjoyed watching this a lot. It's only like an hour and a half, and they just shot some really incredible footage that was shot really well. I mean, it looked really good with the DSLRs. Everything looked very clean, very professional. Some great interviews captured in this with great access and great stories. As a subject, you really can't find somebody better than Jake Roberts. I mean, somebody who's been through a lot, somebody who's very open with his emotions on camera, and all that was great. My criticisms of the documentary are with a lot of the pacing, and we've already kind of talked about that. They got this great footage, but I just thought the setup to those moments was very rushed. The whole thing played out more like a scrapbook and sort of a highlight reel of moments than sort of a something with a flowing narrative that really kind of probably would have been able to emphasize the moments a little bit better. The time frames were jumping around so much that I definitely kind of got lost as a viewer. The editing at times was almost too quick, and big moments just seemed like they were glossed over rather than, you know, kind of slowly built up to. But overall, just simply based on what they were able to capture and you know, what they did present, I felt very satisfied, and it's a very uplifting story.
Those were our thoughts on the resurrection of Jake the Snake.
Uh-huh.
Way, is there anything you left out?
You know, I feel like I just got through telling you everything. Oh, God damn it. We almost made it. Damn.
Oh, God. I hate Outlook.
Why don't you just turn that sound off?
I forget.
No. But turn it permanently off in the settings. You could turn, like, some...
I can do that. I kind of like getting the alert when I get an email, because you never notice the little icon at the beginning when you get the mail.
Well, then...
The envelope. Okay. Are you ready to make some sound via the feedback thread and hear what others have to say? A lot of people watch this documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So we are also, at the end of this, going to announce what we're reviewing next week via our law message board online poll. We have thrown it out, and the people have spoken. We start off with Ronaldo from Milan. As someone who's had his fair share of rehab stints in AA meetings, I can only applaud Jake and Scott for being able to put their demons to rest. As the saying goes, once an addict, always an addict, and I know it's a lifelong struggle to stay sober each day. Great performers usually have lots of personal issues they can't quite cope with. This is what made great artists out of Picasso, Amy Winehouse, and such. But sadly, it's also why geniuses like those tend to self-destruct. A great documentary. How ironic that, of all people, DDP, the guy whose inside jokes about his overblown personality would make people smirk, was the one to take both guys to give them their due rest. The guy won't take any crap about being straight and will go to lengths that most rehab centers won't, out of love and respect for these two icons he idolizes. It's not who you are, but what you do that qualifies you indeed. Both guys are sober and at peace with themselves, and all the memories and WrestleManias and ladder matches and DDTs are to be celebrated for the happy ending instead of the usual creepy headline of another wrestler dying.
We go to Josh from Pennsylvania. I can't believe how many countless times this brought a tear to my eye. As someone who grew up in the 80s, Jake was one of the wrestlers who captured my attention and imagination the second he appeared on the TV. As I grew older, seeing Jake's struggles was difficult to see, as he was someone that had an impact on my youth. After seeing the disaster that was beyond the mat, it was great to actually see something that saw Jake have his demons, but see the road to recovery. Great seeing Scott as well to say that DDP was an angel sent to him. Both is an understatement, to say the least. Great documentary. Also great job, guys. Love listening to all your content.
From Gaurav. Thanks for finally reviewing this one. DDP and crew did a fantastic job with this piece. More importantly, DDP deserves a ton of credit for literally saving the lives of two of the all-time best pro wrestlers in Jake and Scott Hall. The production was not very slick, and that's what made it very natural. I found myself shedding a couple of tears here and there while I saw what Jake was going through. DDP sure deserves to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. I thought Jake or Scott would be a surprise entrant in the Rumble this year, since they are now very healthy. Why do you think it didn't happen? I give this documentary a 10 out of 10. And not putting in the Rumble, I really had no problem. Scott Hall is in no shape or form should be doing wrestling matches. I thought it was enough that he took a back body drop at WrestleMania last year, which the guy has had a hip replacement. I don't feel you need that. And with Jake, I don't need to see either of these two men doing wrestling matches in 2016, even a brief cameo, which the Rumble, there was clearly a decision not to bring back any old names this year as in years past.
Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to, like, I mean, in my head, I've tried to imagine how that would actually go. And, you know, no doubt Jake is probably the most mobile he's been in many years at this point. But still, to have to go in there and to see him in the same ring as somebody like a Dean Ambrose, and to actually look, like, for a Dean Ambrose, for instance, to have to sell a punch from a Jake Roberts, I don't know if they want to treat their current performers like that as good of a feel-good moment, you know, as it would be.
I think oftentimes, and these two are perfect examples, I mean, look at, I mean, addiction aside, the physical ailments that these two have had throughout their careers of doing this, and it's like they get to a point where they've been able to address these physical limitations and injuries, and the end goal is, well, let's put them right back into this scenario and risk them blowing out a knee or hurting their hip. I mean,
I think what we got though on that old school Raw was the perfect way to use Jake.
Yes, I agree. You know?
But what about a gimmick battle royal? How about that?
Oh, the gimmick battle royal. That did not go over well with some people.
Why haven't they done that again?
Because some people were very adamantly thought it was a joke and it shouldn't be done again, even though I thought it was
a fun part.
It was
of
a
that
fun
show.
Match at WrestleMania 17. I agree.
We go to Chris in Ottawa. This documentary is a very impressive piece of work, and I'm glad that they didn't rush it in order for it to be released at the peak of all the coverage. A question for you. The DDP contingent organized an Indiegogo campaign to fund Scott Hall's hip replacement surgery soon after a similar campaign was conducted for Jake. Jake couldn't have afforded the medical care otherwise. Scott Hall, on the other hand, almost certainly could have, as he still owns a rather large home in Florida and is his primary residence in Georgia. Has anyone gone out of their way to point out how the DDP yoga folks, in this instance and others, prey upon fan sympathies in order to generate revenue or funding? It reminds me very much of Jake's Hall of Fame speech with respect to playing with the audience's emotions.
Well, there's our cynical take from Chris in Ottawa. I can't speak to Scott Hall's finances. I mean, I'm not aware of what his financial situation is. When it comes to a guy's health and the amount of wrestlers we see that have gone into financial burden years in their life, I really have no issue with the fans that want to contribute to something such as a guy needing a necessary surgery for a better quality of life. If fans want to donate, I have no problem with that. It's when you get into silly stuff that they're going online to try and raise money for, or for products that they're never going to see the light of day. I really don't have an issue with this.
Yeah, I think it's unfair to even have this conversation without, you know, like somebody like Scott Hall being there or the people at DDP Yoga to actually discuss, you know, the proper needs. So
absolutely. A lot of fans look at wrestlers and just assume they had some big years, that's all saved. And it's like, that's not always the case. Even some of your best years where you don't know what their finances are at this stage of the game. Like, what has Scott Hall been doing for the last decade for money? So yeah. It's very hard to talk about. That was me.
Yeah, so that was me. I did that.
Oh, I'm all confused, man. We go to Lee Russell. The Resurrection of Jake the Snake is a pretty good documentary, but if you followed his career and the problems he's had during and after his runs in the big promotions, it's nothing new. It's nice to see him apparently turning his life around, thanks to DDP. In fact, Scott Hall's turnaround in the film is just as impressive, if not more so. The more interesting story is in the documentary is DDP's, as we get to see how hard he's worked to be taken seriously with his yoga thing, and his need to pay back guys like Jake, who took him under his wing and believed in him when nobody else did, when he tried to break into pro wrestling in his mid-30s. Overall, this is on par with the Iron Sheik documentary, which was also quite good.
We go to Roddy from Glasgow, Scotland, who says, I was interested in this documentary as I had some reasonable access with DDP Yoga myself last year and had obviously seen Jake's Hall of Fame induction, so I knew it had a happy ending, despite knowing that it was all still very interesting to see the journey he went on. What stuck out for me was how much time and effort DDP put into helping him, and it clearly meant so much to him. Jake seemed to treat him like a parent, as clearly whenever DDP left, Jake went off the rails and showed a lack of respect to the others living in the house. However, it was great to see him finally conquer his demons and make peace with his kids. Overall, a well-made film, and for a wrestling fan, you couldn't help but be happy for Jake and have massive respect for DDP and everything he did for him.
Alex from Toronto writes, I was so happy to hear that you would be reviewing this documentary. I actually watched it in the movie theater when it was playing here in Toronto at the Carlton Cinema. It was almost like I had my own personal screening, as I was the only one in the theater since it was a Friday matinee screening. Maybe it was for the best, as like Josh and Gaurav have stated, I also found myself misty-eyed while watching both Jake and Scott's struggles and eventual successes. The ending of the movie where Jake, Scott, and DDP are in the ring was a great way to show that the wrestling bug never leaves these guys and that they are not bitter at wrestling for their issues. One question I have is if you guys think that you will be reviewing the Iron Sheik documentary, which is also very good.
We could be.
Maybe.
It's you know, we might put it up to a vote one of these weeks. We might cool off on a documentary for a while. We tend to maybe do one more intermittently. But, yeah. You haven't seen it?
No, I have not seen it.
Okay, we go to Chris Angler, who says, this was a very compelling illustration of what dealing with an addict is like. I appreciated that they showed Jake making progress, but never left you with the impression that he was fixed and lived happily ever after. It was great to see the milestones Jake achieved, but I like that they made it clear that recovery from addiction is a day-to-day struggle that will have its ups and downs, and that it's best to focus on the here and now. I like that they put a lot of importance on Jake entering the Cauliflower Alley Club and presented it as an honor on par with the WWE Hall of Fame. It would be interesting to know why Jake wasn't granted his wish of a Rumble appearance.
And our final piece of feedback comes from bartender Dave from Bryden's, who is recently a guest co-host on What's Next.
Oh.
Watched this documentary with my wife on Friday night. We both enjoyed the movie, but I personally found it a bit overrated. Maybe it was that I went into it hearing only good things, and I found it fell a little flat. As stated above, I liked how they showed that battling addiction is a day-to-day struggle. I've been battling my own demons for over 20 years now, and I know how hard it can be, and found some scenes hard to watch. DDP stole the show for me and really came across as an amazing individual with a beautiful heart, and I don't think that he was putting on a show. Love the podcast, and thanks for helping me keep awake on the drive home on Monday and Tuesday mornings from work. Any reason that DDP isn't in the Hall of Fame yet is his question. That's always just a year-to-year decision that they make, and I have no doubt that whether it's this year or another year, he will go in.
I think
he should be applauded for the work he has done. As much as his wrestling career is focused on, I think it is this stuff that holds a more lasting effect for others. I mean, the idea that if he can help preserve the lives of two people that had been written off by many people with their problems in Jake and Scott Hall.
I think his case is interesting because I think his career after his wrestling career is probably, as much of a reason for the WWE to want to include him in their Hall of Fame as much as his in-ring career was. And, you know, his WWF run was really just completely more than forgettable. But his WCW run, was quite notable. But I think it's definitely more so the yoga thing and especially helping, Scott Hall and Jake Roberts and people like that I think the WWE would want to be associated with.
All right. So we said that next week's review would be left to a listener vote, and that is the poll we put up for the feedback thread this week. The options were WCW Super Brawl number 2, WCW Super Brawl 2000, WWE No Way Out from 1998 and 2002, and Ultima Lucha, which was the season finale of season 1 of Lucha Underground. And the winner, Mr. Ting, as I refresh my browser just to get in any last-minute votes, the winner is WCW Super Brawl 2000 with 43.14% of the vote.
Wow.
So and narrowly edging out No Way Out 2002. So we are going to go and review Super Brawl 2000, which not only featured a knife being pulled on another wrestler, but as well the one and only appearance of one James Brown on a WCW pay-per-view, which what a perfect timing of this all, because we have Teddy Long on the Law this Sunday night, a man who worked for James Brown way back in the day.
That seems so perfect.
So
I can't wait.
It's going to be like Christmas here on Review Away next week, which is the day that James Brown passed away in 2006.
Wow.
What a time.
There you are with the dates again.
Super Brawl 2000. Looking forward to that.
You know, it's been a while since we've done a bad WCW show.
I know. I think I've built up my immunity.
I don't know.
Go into this with a open mind. You know, the network, they've been vigorously uploading Nitro episodes from... They pretty much have all the 98 episodes up, and now they're uploading the dreaded 1999 episodes. I don't know if 2000 will ever see the light of day, if there's any quality control. But, man, wait, we're going to have to dive into a 1999 Nitro at some point. They've got the Nitro up from the Air Canada Center with the Goldberg-Bret Hart chest plate angle.
I remember watching that live. Yeah,
Better angles during the last 2 years of WCW's run.
Yeah, well,
which went nowhere.
Plenty for us to watch. What do you know? What will be on the WWE Network on Sunday night?
On this coming Sunday night, I can certainly look it up as we look at what the WWE Network has. You know what I hate about this online version?
What?
Okay, that's one click to the main page. Another one to this one.
Yeah.
That's three clicks. Four clicks.
Yeah, you gotta log.
Five clicks.
I know.
Six clicks.
Yeah. When you have a Rogers subscription.
Seven clicks to get to the network.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Holy Christ. Mm-hmm. I know, 2016 problems, but seriously, that's just too much, man.
It is.
What is going on? The WWE Network. I mean, we need to just...
Too much.
Okay. Let's jump to Sunday night, February the 7th. This is what they'll be combating the Super Bowl with. You watching the Super Bowl on Sunday?
Probably not.
Broncos and Cardinals?
No, I'll be watching the WWE Network, and okay. What will I be watching?
Holy Christ, this scroll. Almost as many clicks as it takes to get onto the network
probably
to
edit
scroll
all this.
Down. Oh, they're replaying WrestleMania 4 and the photo to promote WrestleMania 4 is last year's WrestleMania poster.
Have we done WrestleMania 4?
I believe we have.
Okay. So basically all that was just to build up our plug for our new YouTube channel.
That's correct, Wei. Tell us about the new live audio wrestling YouTube channel, which is going to be a major focus for us this year.
Yeah, we want to start doing more video. Of course, that is our professional background is video. So you hear us every single week now. You get to kind of see us. While hearing us.
Which can be good and bad.
Yeah.
Depending on your level of asshole.
So we'll be doing a lot more on the site. We're going to bring back Ask Away this week, which you can check out for probably on Friday night. You'll probably see this particular review that you're listening to right now also up on YouTube. So if you are listening on YouTube, youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling, then hello. But if you are just curious, you should check out the YouTube versions just because you can skip all this terrible banter like you're hearing us right now. We have chapters using the annotation system in YouTube that you can use to skip to all the various parts of the review. So if you're sick of me talking right now and want to jump to the DDP interview, you can just click the little button up there on the
Amazing.
Front page.
I always skip our banter.
And just subscribe because Review Raw in 3 minutes, all our good stuff, everything is going to be up there, and we'll be throwing up a lot of surprises up there in the coming weeks. So check it out.
Yes, and we have reviewed WrestleMania 4.
Great, awesome. So prepare for WrestleMania 4 on the WWE Network this weekend, we will also be putting up that particular review up on the site, on the YouTube channel. So Ted DiBiase we got on that show.
That is true.
On that particular
Ted DiBiase
review.
Joined us to chat about the tournament that year where he went to the finals, losing to Randy Savage. And if you have not checked out the Review Away videos, the intro alone... Unbelievable work by Wei Ting.
If you ever wanted to see the Iron Sheik say, listen to Review Away.
Which many people did not realize that was him.
Yes.
Giving us a promo way back. Okay. So to wrap things up, do go and subscribe to the new Live Audio Wrestling YouTube channel, which features all of the stuff that Wei listed.
Yeah, I should also mention we might not have the custom URL yet at the moment, youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling, but you can access it just by going to Google or YouTube and just search Live Audio Wrestling.
Perfect. And as we did mention on Monday, I'm going to repeat now the fact that Wei Ting and I, this year we will not be going to Dallas, Texas for WrestleMania. So some unfortunate news, but there are just circumstances that we have to be here for WrestleMania week here in Toronto. So we will be back, but we are planning tons of big coverage that week for WrestleMania. I would venture to guess we will probably have minimum one show a day going into WrestleMania on Sunday night. So we have lots of stuff planned and a lot of video components as well that we are working on as we speak.
So Heath Slater will have to wait, unfortunately.
Yes, he's going to have to hold his breath for at least a year until we see him again. So there you go. That is going to wrap up the show. And to take us out, well, it's going to be a long extra because this is our unedited chat with Diamond Dallas Page, who I recently spoke with about the resurrection of Jake the Snake, as well as DDP Yoga. Brand new DDP Yoga app that Wei is preparing meals off of now, which contain videos and recipes. But a lot of it discussing, of course, Jake the Snake Roberts, his work with him, as well as working with not just Chris Jericho, who he helped with his back injury, but also recently worked with AJ Styles with his back issues ahead of the Royal Rumble and the Tokyo Dome show against Shinsuke Nakamura. So here he is, Diamond Dallas Page, and we will chat with you next week on Review Away as we discuss WCW Super Brawl 2000. It's a real pleasure to have this man on the show with us. He is the founder and creator of DDPY, which we are going to be discussing, as well a major figure in the new documentary, which has gotten tremendous reviews, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake, which is out on iTunes. A pleasure to welcome Diamond Dallas Page to the show. How are you doing today, Page?
Oh, bro, it's a great day. I just had lunch with Scott Hall, who is, on a really great path right now. He's about to head to, over to Europe to do a couple shows for, Paige, you know, from WWE, that beautiful, diva. Both her parents wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
And, they have their own federation over there, and Scott's going over to do two appearances for him. And, you know, after, Scott came through the, accountability crib here and was sober all that time, he fell a few times afterwards, but he's back on track now for the last 3 months, and, couldn't be any prouder of him. I just hope he keeps moving forward. So, because he does a lot of really good things when he's sober.
What's the latest on Scott's overall health, how he's doing? I mean, that's documented very well in the documentary, his heart, his hip. How's he doing physically?
Well, everything seems to be very well. Yeah, great. You know, he walks every morning. He gets over to me about 2 or 3 days a week when I'm in town to do the DDPY. And when I'm not, like, I've showed him how to do certain things. So he's always strengthening his hip and breaking up scar tissue and feeling better. And his heart seems to be doing really well. And when he's not drinking, he's in a way better spot. So, I just pray to God that he just keeps moving forward. You know, that's all you can, you know.
Is it with a source of pride that now you can look back at a documentary like this and you hear how Scott's doing and he's able to, I mean, it's night and day where this man was a couple of years ago, that you were a huge inspiration for these two to change their lives around? Is it almost like you're looking at, you know, you're more than just your friends and your peers? I mean, this is just a remarkable recovery that these two men have undergone through a lot of your help.
Well, you know, again, I was just a guide. You know, those guys did all, they had to do all the work. When they fell down, you know, they fell down. I helped them get back up. But, you know, they had to do all the work. And, to know where Jake is today is literally a little mind boggling to me, because, you know, I've known Jake the addict. I've known Jake the athlete. I've known Jake the wrestler. I know Jake God. You know, there's a lot of Jakes.
Yeah.
But the guy that I know today, I was just in Texas, and we did a Comic-Con down there together. And this Jake Roberts has been sober for over 2 years now. You know, after the first year, you could see a shift and the clarity. The fog was lifting. And now I can have, like, I couldn't have a real conversation with Jake, you know, for the longest time. But over these last 2 years, but really over the last year, you know, it's, you know, again, here's a guy who is addicted and still an addict, but is addicted to booze, pills, coke, and crack, coffee, cigarettes. I mean, just keep going, sugar. But today, you know, besides the booze, the pills, the coke, the crack that are gone, I watched him cut down his coffee, like, probably to a third, which for Jake Roberts, if you know Jake, he's a bunch of sugar and caffeine. And, you know, I'm not going to tell him not to do it, because even though I know it's bad for his body, I'm not going to tell him not to do it, because as long as he ain't doing the coke and the crack and the booze, I'm cool. You know?
Yeah.
But just being with him in Texas, he's like, I go, dude, I haven't seen you have a cup of coffee yet. Yeah, he said, I'm going to get one now. He goes, I really cut back. I go, obviously, because over this time we're together, you would have had at least 2 huge cups with a bunch of sugar. And he goes, I don't even put any sugar in anymore. I go, get out of here. Because when Jake was having his new hip surgery, which is recently, he had to work for like 4 months with the hip so bad because he was booked. And he wasn't going to miss any of his bookings. He was not going to ever do another no-show or have to cancel. It's like his creed. It gives him respect for himself, because before he just wouldn't have given a damn, you know, and just, it had been part of, you know, his shame of the addiction. He just wouldn't care about booking. Now he does care to make all his bookings. And so he finally had the hip surgery. And then when he came out of it, he felt so good. He started to push himself a little bit. Then he hurt himself again. But, you know, he, over that period, he put back on about, maybe of the 70 pounds he lost, he probably put about 40 of them back on.
Wow.
But over the last, since I've seen him in, like, a month ago, he's already lost 12 of them. And I think he's just done, he's right around 250 now. 254 or something like that. But, you know, those are wins for Jake. Anytime he can control his weight, and he knows how to do it. He knows how to eat now. You know, he knows how, what, you know, nutrition to put into his body. And at 60, going to be 61, you know, you got to be on top of all that stuff, especially when you abused your body the way Jake did.
When it came to the actual process of taking these two through this program and documenting it all on camera, how important was it that, as it's outlined in the documentary, when we see Jake stumble, that he can see this for himself on camera and he can relive this for the next 24 hours and see himself in this state? How much of a difference did that make for him to see what his state, how it was altered when he would stumble?
Well, it's a big part that didn't even happen like that, because when we'd film it, we'd put it up. Jake would never look at it. And I think that had a lot to do with him stumbling, because he never did see it. Not until the last time that when he was on his last fall, we're getting ready to put this movie out. And it hadn't been that long, you know, since the last fall.
Yeah.
And I told Jake, I said, first of all, when we sat down to watch the movie, you know, I said, listen, man, I said, first I have to ask you a question. I said, what's the most important thing about our business, you know, sports entertainment? And he said, the finish. I said, exactly. I said, our finish is strong. You know what we did. But when you see it on film, you're going to be really proud. Getting there, there's some really dark spots. He goes, I know. And I go, no, I need to tell you this. There's some stuff that's going to be really hard for you to watch, because I know you never watched this before, any of this film. You know, any of the, when everybody was watching a new video was out, and, you know, he'd walk out of the room. And I said, now you got to watch this. And you cannot get up. You cannot leave. I go, that you have to promise you, you'd never walk out in a match. I said, you can't walk out on this movie. He goes, I won't. I go, no, but listen. You can't walk out on the movie, but I'm going to tell you right now, dude, if you are not behind this movie, and it's, you know, like I said, it's a really inspiring movie, but there is you're not going to like watching. You know, I said, if you don't want us to put this movie out, it's dead. You know, so that's where it's got to go. You know, so, you got to remember, I called this the resurrection of Jake the Snake, before I ever even got to Jake's house. You know, one of my buddies I was talking to, name is Moser, and I told him what I was going to do with Jake, and he said, wow, that could be the resurrection of Jake the Snake. That was like a light bulb went off, and I go, that's the name of the movie. You know, it was Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali said a lot of things, but the one thing he said that I didn't know he said, and he's quoted in those brainy quotes spots, on that site, Brainy Quotes, it said, the repetition of affirmations leads to belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. Well, I thought about Ali because I looked up to him so much as a kid for so many reasons, not just a boxer, but who he was as a man. And I started to think about the one thing I heard him say over and over and over again, and it was, I am the greatest. I'm the greatest of all time. I can't be beat. I am the greatest. I bet you said it a million times. And then I started thinking, the repetitions of affirmations. I'm the greatest. I'm the greatest of all time. When they did the 100 top athletes of the 20th century, number one, Muhammad Ali. Now, was he actually really the greatest athlete of that century? Well, according to all the voters, he's number one. And I just, you know, you have to have a repetition of positive affirmations in your mind. And I don't care if it's something as simple as I love me. I love me. I like me. I love me. I don't care. So you don't say, oh God, I'm so worthless. Oh, I'm never going to be able to do this. It's never going to happen. You know, if you say you can or you say you can't, you're right. Do you know who said that?
Who? Who was that?
Henry Ford.
Wow.
But what the hell did he ever do? You know what I mean? It's all about the positive affirmations that you repeat in your mind. So when I said this is going to be the resurrection of Jake the Snake, that's all I said it was. It wasn't going to be, this is going to be the great fall down, or he's going to be a little bit, this could be good for Jake the Snake. It was like, no, this is the resurrection. Now, Jake, my vision for you, and you have to have the same vision. When I went down to Gainesville, Texas, he'd already lost. He had to do some of the work on his own. I wasn't just going to take him and hand feed him. Because he never, when, and I got to clarify this, because a lot of wrestlers listen to this, and they probably heard this, and some, most people have it, though. Without Dusty Rhodes, there is no Diamond Dallas Page. The late, great Dusty Rhodes is one of my best friends. I was one of his five friends you could count on his hand. He told me that numerous times. Without Dusty, there was no Diamond Dallas Page. But without Jake the Snake Roberts, there's no three-time world champion. It just never happened. So I always wanted to pay Jake back. So this movie, you know, Jake didn't just hand me how to work. He made me figure it out. So I know that works. So I told Jake when I talked to him originally on the phone, when he told me he'd do my program, I sent him the video of the disabled veteran that I helped walk again. Have you ever seen that video?
This is with Arthur, yes.
Yes. When you put the post up on your site, put that video up next.
Yeah, it's an incredible video for those that haven't seen it.
And that, and someone who has seen it. You know, it's like something you can't watch too much. You think you're having a bad day, you don't think you're going to be able to, you know, make it to a workout, or you don't think you're going to be able to eat the right way. You don't think, oh, God, I have it so bad. Watch that video and watch what's possible, because that's really what that video is all about. Anything's possible. I showed that to Jake Roberts, and he said, send me the program. I said, don't do any of the workout stuff. Just do the eating plan. Try that phase three eating plan. It's going to help you. It's going to make you feel better. Jake was 307 at the time. You know, 9 days later, he was down 8 pounds. Didn't do anything. I was like, don't do anything else. I'll be there tomorrow. And I brought Steve Yu, the director, with me, and we started the film. This movie, I never knew he was as beat up as he was. I mean, I was sure, you know, he's okay, he's overweight. I don't care about that. But when you're overweight and you're beat up like one of the boys, when your body is going through the beating that Jake Roberts has been through, well, you know, that's a whole different animal. Jake couldn't go from standing to the floor, off the floor to stand back up. He couldn't do it. So I had to, you know, give him a chair and help him move around like that. And, long story short, when I left there, you know, I told him, I said, you lose 20 pounds, I move you to Atlanta. And he lost the 20 pounds. So I moved him to Atlanta and we started on this journey. And, you know, as you know, there's a lot of dark spots in it. But when we got to the end of the movie, when we were sitting there in that room and we got to the end, and I'm biting my tongue because I'm not going to say, so what do you think? I want him to react. But he doesn't do anything. And then finally he looks over at me. And then he looks back at the TV. And then he looks over at me. And I'm thinking, say something, you know, but I'm not saying that. And he looks back at the TV. And he says, what, no cartoons? And I just started laughing. He said, so what's the deal? Did you like it? He said, no. I loved it.
Wow.
Because I didn't like looking at the spots that are dark. He said, but that right there is a wake-up call. And I think there's three things why Jake finally was able to get where he is today, and I hope he can continue it because, you know, we're not around each other a lot anymore. And you are the five people you hang out most with. That's who you become. Jake got to see, like you pointed out earlier, what he looked like when he was in that state of being the addict. Because an addict will lie, steal, and cheat. and tell you that you challenge their honesty when you ask them if they're, you know, if they're lying, because you know they're lying. That's what they do. So being able to see that, also being able to take antabuse, and that before Jake's last fall, I, you know, sat him down and we stopped making the movie for a while. I never stopped editing it, but I wanted him to think we stopped everything. Because I told him, I said, Jake, I said, this isn't about Scott Hall. Scott Hall is a player in this movie. You are the star. Your participation in the resurrection of Jake the Snake could end up changing tens of thousands of people's lives. Hundreds of thousands of people's lives it could change. Because when an addict has a problem, it's just not his problem. 9 times out of 10, it's his parents' problem. It's his spouse's problem. It's their kid's problem. It's affected one addiction could affect 20 to 40 people or more.
Yeah.
So Jake has the opportunity, I told him, I said, to change lives at a whole nother level. But I'm not putting this movie out unless you're straight. Unless you're walking the talk, dude. I said, I'm not doing it. I don't care what I got invested in it. Doesn't matter. Not putting it out there. And I said, here's what you're going to have to do moving forward to get my attention. He had taken antabuse a couple of times during the movie or during the journey. And this time I was like, there is no stopping. I said, if you stop antabuse, you're saying to me, I've got this. I don't need your help anymore. That's what you're saying to me. I said, I'm not going to give up on you. I said, but you can't give up on you. If you do that, then that's cool. You can give up on you. I don't care. At that point, I washed my hands of it because I'd gone through a bunch of roller coasters. And he knew I was at the end of it. He sent me him taking his pill on a video on the iPhone every single morning for over a year.
Wow.
And then at some point, I said, dude, you don't have to send that to me anymore. I know you're doing it. And then his daughter would lay out his pills every morning because he needs a certain amount of pills because his body is really screwed up. And it's like every other senior citizen's on meds. So is Jake. But it's not a bunch of painkillers anymore. You know, it's not a bunch of muscle relaxers. They're whatever the doctor recommends. And he's not abusing anything. And the level that he's at today, I couldn't be any prouder of him, you know.
You know, it's mentioned briefly in the documentary, and Jake has been very outspoken about how he was portrayed in Beyond the Mat. Knowing him to the level you do now, Paige, do you feel he looks back at that and his anger is at the producers of that movie, or his anger is at his own state at that point in his life and seeing it, as we mentioned, seeing this on camera for himself, the state he was in when that movie was done 15, 16 years ago?
Well, you know, I think he trusted that director. Like, he trusted me. He knows I'm not going to, like, whatever I'm going to put up there, I'm going to show him, you know, like, here it is. Like, dude, like, I showed him the whole movie before we put it out there. You know, so he knew he had that from me.
Yes.
At any point in time, he would have said, I just don't want to do it anymore. I would have sort of killed him. That guy, Barry Blaustein, you know, I think Jake was so, I think he trusted him too much and he let him come into spots that he shouldn't have. And, he's mad at him for screwing him. I think he's mad at himself, you know, somewhat to a certain degree too for letting that happen. And, you know, cause it affected his whole family. Like I said, one addiction in Jake's scenario affects a lot of people.
Sure.
You know, but when they're sober, it's like, wow, look at this. You know, and the bottom line is, you know, I'm sure, you know, no one wants to see himself be in that position.
Sure.
You know, and he had no idea that he was filming him because he was whacked out. You know, but that's what happens when you're whacked out. That's why they call dope, you know.
Now, as well, you know, I feel that there's very few people that could get through to people like Jake Roberts or Scott Hall, and I think that's why I think they did have that trust in you, knowing where they've come from. You guys are performers that, I mean, for your lives, you would look into a camera to convey a message and convey a character. At what point did you feel they were able to not notice the cameras around? Did they ever reach that point where the red light was not something that they were aware of, and we got to see Jake Roberts and Scott Hall and see a level we've never seen of these people before on camera?
Well, I don't think they ever really cared that the cameras were there.
Really?
Because I was really clear coming in. It's like when Scott came in, I was like, bro, just so you know, we're filming Jake's story. And if you're here, you're going to be in the film. And you're going to be, you know, they're going to talk to you. You know, and the camera's going to be on you at times. Because I want to capture all this in completely real time. And I had cameras all over the house. And my guys, it wasn't like I had a office in my home. My home was my office. And I had 15, 16 people in here a day between editors and filmers and, you know, graphic designers. You know, so the cameras were always on it. There's certain things we missed, you know, because I didn't have all of it all the time. I remember one time Jake came downstairs and he was so, I'm so effing pissed at myself. And he was starting to pull himself down. I call it emotional gravity. Like, nobody can pull you down more than you. No one can make you feel worse about you than you. You know, the positive side is no one can make you feel as good as you can feel about you. Again, because it's all your inner mind voice. You know, I call, you know, the story you tell yourself. Well, with Jake, he punched the table and he's so mad. I said, so what's the problem? And he told me, and he's so frustrated with himself. So I said, come here, I want to show you something. And I walked into the bathroom with him and I looked in the mirror. I said, what do you see? He said, a loser. I said, stop saying that. I said, dude, you got to stop saying that to yourself. You're not a loser. Are you screwed up a little right now? Yeah. Can you get over it? Absolutely. But you got to start working on what you're doing and what you're telling yourself. I go, look at that T-shirt. And right in the beginning of the movie, you see he still wears this T-shirt.
Yes.
And it's a skeleton. And it's a white shirt and a red skeleton. And he's got some kind of flag. And down the front of it in big letters, it says Wasted Youth. I said, you wear that shirt all the time. You also wear Charlie Manson stuff. I go, that's who you want to be? I go, wasted youth. I go, you're telling yourself that you wasted your youth. You wasted everything by wearing that shirt. That's the story you tell yourself. I go, what you should be wearing is failure is not an option. Never, never give up. My destiny is not my history is not my destiny. That's the stuff you should be wearing. And he walked out of that room, walked upstairs, put on a completely different shirt, and came downstairs. Came downstairs with three different shirts. One was Manson, and I can't remember what the other one was. He said, D, I'm throwing this out. I get it. You're right. I said, it's not I'm right, dude. I just want you to get it because I'm not right all the time at all. I just want you to see it from a different perspective, bro. That's it. And then you pick how you want to treat it. So as far as the guy did, you know, we've been on camera forever. So it's not a really big deal. None of us get nervous about that. We just can act just ourselves, you know, and plus again, we had 500 hours of film.
Wow.
To get down to 93 minutes.
It's a lot of bonus footage you've got potentially.
No, not potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
For the DVD.
Yes.
For the DVD. You know, right now anybody can go on iTunes and and get the movie. And it's you can rent it or you can buy it. Surprisingly, like 70% of the people buy it because they want to show it to their friends. They want to show it to their family. What's really cool is we've been on the front page of iTunes, you know, since pretty much the second day.
Yes.
By the second day, we were number one in sports movies and in documentaries. Today, I think we're like two or three or four or whatever, but we're up on that front page every day. And the movie's been out for a couple weeks now. And it's about to go live on Google Play and Amazon and I forget who else, but that's going to happen like the second week of February. So that's really cool, you know, and it's getting out there for the people to be able to see. Somewhere down the line, you know, Showtime or, you know, Netflix, I'm sure that's where we'll end up. But we will do a DVD probably in the next 60 days. And we have so much footage. And one of the things we did extra, myself, the director, Steve Yu, and Jake sat around like the directors do when they're, you know, they do when they talk about the movie and what they were making the movie. I love that stuff. I love the behind the scenes stuff of the behind the scenes. And you're going to see me and Jake and Steve talk about that entire movie. So after you've watched that a couple times, now you get to see that version of it, which would be really cool. And then we have so many other extended cuts that we couldn't fit into the movie. And we'll be putting all those on there. There'll just be a lot of extra footage. It's going to be a really amazing DVD.
Before we wind this down, I did want to as well touch upon DDPY and just how much this has affected people that are still performers. And one very recent case is AJ Styles, who had a debilitating back injury a month ago. And here he goes, 30-plus minutes in the Royal Rumble this past week. We know Chris Jericho, who has just talked about this completely turning his career around. He's in the Rumble for 50 minutes this past Sunday. First of all, tell me about this, what you can share in regards to what AJ was going through and being able to do what he's done over the past month, going to the Tokyo Dome, and now here he is in the WWE, and you would have no idea this guy's back was in the state it was.
You know, it's funny because I get, you know, Chris Jericho is my biggest supporter because he knows that I've helped him make millions of dollars and continue to live the dream. When Chris showed up, DDP Yoga, and I call it DDPY or both, so people, it's DDPY, not DDP Yoga, but DDPY, and that's why I want everyone to go with it. So I'm glad you mentioned that as the name. Jericho, you know, his career was over. He herniated his L4. I had ruptured my L4 and L5. So same injury, but more, even more extreme. And, again, for Chris Jericho, I showed him the video of Arthur Borman, disabled vet. 5 minutes later, and I sent it to him. 5 minutes later, he called me back. He said, D, you tell me what to do and I'll do it. I mean, whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. And in 5 weeks, he was 85% pain-free. In 3 months, he was 100% pain-free and headlined against Punk at Mania in 2011. You know, and then when he, at that point, he had completely, you know, he doesn't lift weights. He does no other cardio but DDPY. And that's the really cool part. When Jericho can go out there and do, like AJ, I'm sure he's still lifting weights and he's still, this is part of his toolbox, as I like to say. It's his preventative maintenance so that AJ Styles can work at the level that very few people have ever worked, you know, taking the impact on their body. But, Chris, Jericho had, sent me an email like he does with a lot of people saying, hey, bro, this guy needs your help. Please help him out. Like anybody Jericho turns me on to, I help him immediately. I give him everything. But AJ, that's mostly to musicians. But AJ being one of the boys, I take care of all the boys, you know, and the girls. Whoever wants my stuff, I just give it to them. And when I found out that AJ, you know, needed help, I tweeted it, DM'd him and said, hey, bros, here's my number. Call me. So he's out here in Georgia. So he can come to the house. Matter of fact, we are releasing today a video of AJ coming to the crib.
Oh, cool.
I should say to the PC. And just filming, you know, that little workout that we had and know what his feelings are about it. And, you know, I'd been working with him at that spot and I knew he was going to take this and really do it because he's like Chris Jericho or he's like Dallas Page where whatever it takes to hold back the hands of time. And what JJ, what I could do for AJ right away was put him on the app. Now, anybody who's listening, you don't even have to pay for this part of it. Go get the app. DDP Yoga Now. It's on iTunes, excuse me, and it's on Google Play. And it's a free app. And here's the free part. The free part is you can do your own workouts if you've already got other DVDs of mine or whatever, and you can put the DVDs up on your TV and you can hit the custom workout. The custom workout, if you have a Bluetooth heart monitor, will automatically track your progress. It'll track the time you worked out. It'll track the calories you burned. It'll track where you were in your fat burning zone and for how long. At the end of the workout, if you didn't wear your heart monitor, you could make up to 300 points. If you wear your heart monitor, you get to double those points. And points, if you're part of the subscription model, are good for t-shirts, Tervis bottles, mats. The top points we're working on will get you a weekend at the accountability crib. As you can imagine, that's a lot of points. But also part of the free part of the app is our whole tracking system. And anytime you start any kind of program, you should track it. So you see monthly where you are. So many people have... You know, they think, oh, well, I haven't changed that much. I've only been doing this 60 days. Then they take the other pictures on the 60 days and they compare them to day one and they go, oh my God, I'm really doing good. Again, the story you tell yourself, it just doesn't work for addicts. And, you know, it works for everyone. What is the story when you're trying to, oh God, I have so much trouble with the food. I'm an emotional eater. You keep telling yourself that, you're right. If you say you can and you say you can't, you're right. Everything you can change. It just takes work. If it was easy, everybody would be shredded in great shape. But it's not. It's hard. But it's the hard that makes it great. So with my app, DDP Yoga Now, we've got so you can take the 6 pictures, and I show you exactly how to do them with a silhouette. You can track your weight, track your measurements, track your pain ratio, track your blood pressure, track your blood sugar and your A1C for being diabetic. Now, every time you put that in every month and you track it, you get more points. So everybody, and the points, bing, 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 are like a video game. And I was speaking in the colleges, KSU, Kennesaw State University, the last two nights, and I did a lecture, and then I did a workout with the kids. And when I got to the point where on the, you know, the video monitor, and the points came up, and they realized it was a video game, they popped huge. Because everybody wants to play video games. Everybody wants to get more points. I also have a whole cooking section in there. Not where it just gives you recipes. We give you the recipes, we give you the directions how to make them, and a video right next to that so you can watch me make it for you. We've also got videos up there in the DDP TV section. That's all inspiring stuff. Inspiring videos that will help you stay motivated and stay inspired on your journey. And then we've got the workouts. Now the subscription part, which is the workouts, I've got everything in there from my classic workouts to my brand new, my DVDs that are for, you know, you can invest in now on ddpyoga.com. Those DVDs are, excuse me, those DVDs are all brand new. All the workouts are brand new. Plus, we've got DDPY for kids, ages 7 to 12, And those are amazing. I'm getting so many people, you know, put up on, you know, on Facebook or Twitter, at RealDDP, at DDP Yoga, or our DDP Yoga one word official site. It's got 150,000 people on it. Please go by there and like that. But so many people are putting pictures up of their kids doing the workouts with them, which is really amazing. And we also have, for people like your grandparents or your father and mother, maybe they're older, you know, and their body's beat up, they're overweight. They can't go from the ground to the, you know, to standing, or to the standing to the ground, like Jake and Scott or Arthur Borman. So I developed a whole series of workouts called Beginner Beginner around using a chair. And the most cool, the coolest thing of all, and I'll be doing it in 50 minutes. Let me see exactly. Let me see what the countdown is. 57 minutes. I will be live coming from the Performance Center by myself. Normally I have a whole group of people, people behind me working, working out, people in front of me, the cameras. It's a live workout. This one's going to be one-on-one with DDP.
Cool.
And this is more of a upper intermediate advanced psycho workout, so that the people who are really been doing this for a while and they want to be challenged again, the guy who's 3 months from 60 years young is about to push their buttons. And of course, all of our live workouts after the next day, they go into the queue, which means they go right into the queue of our workouts. Right now we've got about, we've got probably about 40 workouts up there. And, so you're never going to get bored. Next year at this time, we'll probably have 200 workouts up there. I know there'll be at least 150, because it's always changing and I'm always changing it up. And all of this is coming from the DDP Yoga Performance Center, which is what I call the house that Shark Tank built. And, we didn't get a deal on Shark Tank. What we got was exposure. I didn't offer the sharks more than 5%, and I wasn't going to give them more than 5%. All I cared about, I didn't even want any money from them. I just wanted a dollar and let them fight amongst themselves. But the show was like, the producers were like, well, if you don't need the money, we can't put you on the show. I said, I could use the money. You know, we can't use the money. But what I asked for was $2,000 to start building an app. The app, DDP Yoga Now, that I'm telling you about, we are approaching $1 million.
Wow.
Cost. Again, the app that Shark Tank built. I just didn't put it on iPhone. Every time you add another device, you double the price. Triple the price. So I put it on iPhone, iPad, Droid, and tablet, and your computer. So if something was going to cost me $10,000 to do, it just cost me $50. So this app, when you get on it, and like I said, everyone and anybody who works out, period, whether you subscribe to DDP Yoga now or not, you should have this app because it does so many cool things and it's just going to keep increasing. Coming in March or April, probably April. April, probably when I get back, might be May, but that's the latest. What will be coming to the DDP Yoga Now app will be the DDP video wake up alarm clock, where I come up on your phone or your iPad, knocking on your screen, yo, monkey, get out of bed. don't make me come in there. We've got a lot of funny videos we're going to be doing, a lot of inspiring videos, because at the DDP of the Performance Center, where we film the cooking shows, where we film the workouts, we also have a 30-foot green screen that's 16 feet high. And when we add the flooring down, it comes out 20 feet. Well, that's where we're going to be doing a lot of the wake-up alarm clock videos from. We've got a couple that we didn't use that, but we're going to be using a lot there so I can be anywhere coming to you to wake your ass out of bed, to get on the mat, and do your DDPY now or else.
That's fantastic. Well, final thing here before we let you go, and thank you so much for this time, Paige. I just wanted to get an update. It was about a year ago that you had a very unexpected issue with your throat. You were hospitalized. How are you doing close to a year after this staph infection you got in your throat?
Well, it wasn't a staph infection. It was more of congestion down. My wife knows how to say it exactly.
Okay.
That's the one problem I don't have a problem. I feel freaking great. But I still have this hoarseness in my throat, and it really has to do that I'm working too hard more than anything. Like, if you knew how many interviews I did today in between taking Scott Hall to lunch and going to go do DDPY live, it's like I never stop. So at some point, I'm going to have to hit pause for a day or two,
you know,
and then it'll work its way back. But, you know, I'm so passionate about what I'm talking about, you know, and obviously I'm not talking like this all the time. I'm talking like this because I'm passionate about what I'm talking about. And I've been told my whole life that my enthusiasm is affection is what do they call it now? I can't remember the word now. Tell me all my life. See,
infectious.
Infectious. That's the word. Enthusiasm is infectious. And whatever it takes people to be moved to action, because like Arthur's video, or did you see that the guy, who was 510 pounds video? Did you see that guy's video?
Yes.
Loses 313 pounds.
Amazing.
In 17 and a half months. Now he's in my videos. He's in Fat Burner Plus. And I'll leave you with this, because this is what DDP Yoga is about. And it was never about weight loss. DDP Yoga was about healing your body. The weight loss turned out to be a really awesome side effect. So my point is that I want to show people that anything's possible. So in the Fat Burner workout, Fat Burner 2.0, and I believe you can actually see this on the app, I come walking towards the camera saying, you know, there's a lot of fitness companies out there who like to use fitness models as the people who work out with them. Here at DDP Yoga, we have a different philosophy. We like to take the people who had amazing results and put them in our workouts to inspire you. Like these people. And Jarrett, who's 5'13 at the time, pops up there. A woman behind him, she's about 225, maybe 230. Her husband across from him, across from the room from him, right there on the other side, he's about 340. And the woman in front's about 210 pounds. And I go, but they don't look like that anymore. They look more like this. And the girl on the left loses 60 pounds. The guy behind her loses 140. His wife across loses 80. And Jarrett loses 313 pounds. And then I go, pretty impressive, huh? Now you got to ask yourself, what could you do? And then bang, we start to work out. And then we're right there to work out with you. If that doesn't inspire people, I don't know what does.
Well, the app is the DDP Yoga Now app that you can get on iTunes for your iPhone, iPad, just a simple search. And as he mentioned, it is free to download. And of course, The Resurrection of Jake the Snake, it is out on iTunes now, coming to Google Play and Amazon, as well as a DVD that will be coming out later this year. So much that you can get. And of course, DDPYoga.com is probably the best destination for everything related to DDPY and the documentary. And congratulations on the documentary and everything. Obviously, your passion comes through, Paige, and I can't thank you enough for stopping by and chatting with us at length here.
My pleasure, man. Now, first of all, I want to send a shout out to the guy who made this possible. And I know he's related to you in some way, but Kevin from DDP Says Twitter, I found it very entertaining. You know, at Twitter, if you guys want to follow me, at RealDDP or at DDP Yoga, I saw this tweet that guy put DDP Says, and it was one of my quotes. And I go, what is that? So I pull it up, and he says on it, I am not Diamond Dallas Page. You know, I'm a fan of his work, love his inspirational stuff, and I'm just going to put quotes up here from time to time. And I started following him. And I was like, wow, this guy is really cool. I got to get a hold of him. And that's how we ended up. And he wrote a review because he's done a lot of editing and producing of documentaries. And he really put the movie over. Kevin really put it over. And, you know, and he said, no, you got to get on John's show. You know, you got to do this show. It'll really help get the word out. So, thank you, bro, for taking the time. And thanks, Kevin, for putting this together. And have a blessed day, bro.